Hello, mamas. It's Melissa and Melina from The Village. And
hey, we're back.
And today we've got a really special guest, and her name is Jo. And Jo is a marriage celebrant and one of the owners of Ivory Tribe, which I'm going to leave her to tell you a little bit more about, and mum to her beautiful little daughter. Welcome, Jo. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Melissa and Melina. I'm really excited to be with you.
We're so excited to have you on board. We're so grateful that you've actually, you know, contacted us and said, hey, you want to share your story with us and any other mum listening. I think it's a fascinating story and I cannot wait for the rest of our chat today.
Yeah. So, Jo, can you just tell us a little bit more about you and Ivory Tribe and what you do with your work?
Yes, of course. So, look, in terms of work, etc., I work as a marriage celebrant. I'm based in Geelong, but I've been doing that for about 7 years and worked kind of all across Victoria and a little bit of interstate as well, sharing people's love stories, etc.
Beautiful.
So I've found it's been a really fascinating and beautiful job to have over that time. And then within that, about 3 years ago, myself and a couple of business partners decided to set up a wedding blog / directory that's centred on Victoria and showcasing all the talent that we have in our region. And within that, we then co-wrote a wedding planning book called Bride Business. So certainly a lot of wedding work that's been keeping me very busy over the last sort of 5 to 7 years.
Your Instagram feed makes me want to just rewind and do my wedding all over again.
Absolutely. Oh. Gorgeous.
Absolutely. We also need the budgets to match.
Yes, indeed. And your mum to your daughter?
I sure am. So I've got a little girl called Heidi who, turned 5 at the end of June. So she's off to school next year, which is such an exciting step for her. And, I'm really excited for her. So it's been really nice these last few weeks chatting about that new step in her life and how excited she is about it.
How amazing. It's such an exciting time for everybody, I think.
Absolutely. I cannot bloody wait.
You say that now, then you'll need a box of tissues on the first day.
I know.
Only for the first day. And then you're like, okay, this is good.
Then you're lunching.
Yeah, then we're lunching and coffeeing.
For sure.
So, Jo, Melina and I heard you speak a little while ago and we're absolutely blown away by your story.
And your strength.
Yeah, and your courage and just, you know, the way that you shared your story. So just, you know, wanted to explore that a little bit with you today as well.
Yeah, absolutely, ladies. So, look, I guess the one sort of really defining thing about me, although I'm hoping it doesn't define me for the rest of my life, is that, just over a year ago, I became a widow when my husband, Craig, very unexpectedly passed away from an asthma attack. So it was kind of one of those moments that, you know, you were just going through your day-to-day life. I'd been working hard. I'd had this beautiful little girl and, you know, was raising her. And, through the loss of my husband, which, you know, obviously brought around a huge amount of grief / trauma as I was unfortunately there to witness and be part of it all. So it's been a crazy year, as I soon found that my whole life had basically been flipped on my head as I knew it. And it was the strangest feeling to kind of go into that new day after Craig had passed away and just think, oh my God, what has actually happened to my life? Who am I anymore? And then having these two new titles, which of course, you know, all of a sudden you've become a widow. And also the big one for me, and I remember it kind of dawning on me maybe a few days after he'd passed away, that I was now a single mother. And that was a really big one for me because I think, I don't know, I was thinking about this earlier, but do you remember that ad about beef where that woman would say, like, I'm a single mum with a daughter?
Yes.
Yeah. And I remember my sister and I saying to each other, she was like, that's you now. And I was like, oh my goodness, that, that is me. And just, it's been a huge period of transition over this last year as I've, found myself in that role. And it hasn't been easy, but, it's been a big change for me.
It's one that I just, you know, we were, like I said, just gobsmacked. Absolutely gobsmacked and really speechless after we heard you share that story for the first time, and that came up for me when you were talking was, how on earth do you overcome, or not even overcome, but just experience that level of grief?
Yeah. You know,
at the same time as being in that role as, like you said, single mum.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, it honestly has just been the most intense period of time, and especially those first few weeks and months, because I was just in a state of absolute shock for weeks
and
weeks
you would be.
On end. Like, I just shook, I talked really quickly, and I've soon learned, I think, the innate thing in me is just to kind of come out fighting and being like, well, stuff this world, I'll still overcome it. But, you know, you can only take that on for a certain period of time until you begin to crash, etc. And I think, too, what I was finding difficult was that I was so, not caught up in, but I was trying to grapple what had actually happened to me and what had happened to Craig. And then I still had to factor in, well, what does this mean for Heidi as well? Mm. And look, certainly in terms of my parenting style for those first few weeks, they were not great. And I really, I had to sort of call on help for people to sort of take her away, because I was just trying to get my head around everything and what had happened. And I don't know whether you ever kind of overcome grief, but I think time goes on, you learn to deal with it a little bit better, and I think you sort of settle into it a little bit more and know what to expect from it. So it's funny, when I was talking about that whole, you know, I kind of hit fight mode and I was like, stuff you world, I can do this, and I had my first crash, and funnily enough, it was, I'd gone to bed one night, something had stirred me up, as in I just couldn't sleep. And so I did not sleep all night. And I woke up the next morning in an absolute state of anxiety, stress, etc. And it just kept going day after day. And I felt like that period of time lasted about a month, and it was awful. And then, you know, realizing at some point I came out of that. So as time has gone on, I now realize when I get into those states that it's not going to last forever. You know, everything will be okay. And you just learn a little bit more about yourself and your style of coping, and what you need to do to get through those periods as well, certainly.
Because it's so cyclical, grief as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, there's times when you're okay, and sometimes you kind of feel even guilty about being okay.
Absolutely. And then the next week, you know, something might trigger you off, and I still have these memories of me actually being in Gold Coast Airport earlier in the year, and I was trying to hire a cab, basically having a problem with hiring the car. It resulted in me crying for probably the next 3 hours straight. Where you're just going, like, something obviously triggered me at that point of time where I felt vulnerable, I wasn't feeling good, I was probably tired, and the man just wasn't helping me with getting a car.
And it was the straw that broke the camel's
back. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, on a daily basis, it's quite challenging being a woman, as it is with hormones.
Absolutely.
And the pressure that we put on ourselves and the pressure we have on ourselves, and then to have, obviously, you know, this terrible, you know, thing happened that you've experienced on top of all of that.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah.
You spoke about when you go through we went through those moments, and you still may, where you know, for a month you were feeling the way you did. Did you seek any, like, for those that maybe be listening or those that know of someone that's going through it?
Yeah.
Was it, did you seek professional help? Was it going inward? Was it writing in a journal? Like, what were some of your tips that you could that you could share that may help someone?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I knew almost immediately after Craig had passed away that I needed to go and seek help, and I needed to seek help from professionals, especially. So I went to a psychologist, I think, within the first sort of 2 weeks of him passing away, and although it was probably the fighter who'd be going, well, let's just get this done, we'll sort of I'll be fine. But, you know, I definitely was aware that not only was I fighting this from a grief perspective, but there was also a huge lot of trauma that I'd been through, and so it was a kind of two-pronged attack in that sense. So look, the psychologist has been a big one for me. But as time went on after seeing her, I started to realise I had a lot more symptoms than just kind of the mental side of things. And I think it soon became apparent that whilst mentally I often feel good physically my body will say other things. So I still suffer from a lot of things, like a lot of jaw pain and ear pressure and back pain and things. And I know that's my body's way of telling me that enough is enough, or I need to slow down, or I need to pay attention to it. So I then started to seek the help of things like an osteopath to deal with that, but also an amazing kinesiologist in Melbourne that I felt like was looking at me physically but also from an emotional perspective too. And so I found that really wonderful and reassuring. And then I went through a bit of a crazy period where I was just trying anything and everything.
As you do.
Yeah, I've done it all. And I think, you know, I'm really fascinated about this journey that I'm going through, and I'm open to kind of anything. So with that, I've seen mediums, and I've done Reiki, and I've been to intuitive readers and all those kind of things. And I just think you've just got to be doing something to help yourself. But I definitely, one of my biggest pieces of advice is to sometimes look at, you know, any adversity that you're facing and go, it's not always just mental. So, you know, look at yourself in three different ways, and that's physical, emotional, and mental. And but also, you know, think of the little things that make you feel good. And for me, that was walking and hiking and things like that, and just getting out in nature or sitting by the beach. So I try to do that when I can. And look, that's hard, because you've got to find time to do that.
Absolutely.
Sometimes it's just going, I'll have a glass of wine. It's probably more likely 3/4 of a bottle of wine. Yeah. But, you know, just unwinding or reading a book or making time to spend time with a friend. Because I know sometimes when you're going through hard times, sometimes you just want to shut off from everyone as well. So sometimes it takes a bit of force to go, do you know what, I'll invite a friend around. And normally once you've done that, you're like, actually, that was great, I should be doing more often than not. But I definitely, it's
just trying lots of different things then, and obviously finding one that fits the best.
Absolutely. And I love what you said before, just around remaining open. I can't remember what you said after that, but like open to the experience of, and I think sometimes that's, you know, tempting for us in really challenging situations to not remain open, really try and, you know, push it away or make it go away or make it go control it. So I love that. That
good on you
being open to the process.
Absolutely. And that's a big part of it. And I'm still, like, I still am seeking the help of a psychologist, and probably will for a long time to come. You know, just tap into those different things, but definitely trying them. And also just be open about it. I don't think in this day and age now, particularly for women, that there should be like any stigma attached to it. But also there's no point just fighting it on you, like yourself, because I think it'll only undo you in 5 years, 10 years time, 20 years time, when you realize you perhaps had not addressed that situation at the time. So
my dad always explains emotions as growing up, he'd say, like, pretend you're a sponge. There's only so much water a sponge can absorb before it starts to seep.
Absolutely.
And that's exactly what you're saying. You know, eventually it will just ooze out in different ways.
Yep.
And I think another good one that someone said to me too was, like, at the time I was thinking, oh my God, I'm spending a fortune on all this health as well. And I remember hearing this person say, well, you either pay now or you pay later.
I was like, that
is a great point. And so when I'm often putting my card through at the psychologist, the kinesiologist, or whatever I'm trying, I think that I'm like, look, I'm paying for it now, but I'm investing in myself so that I'm not having to pay later.
Which is so great, because I think as women, you know, we can really feel guilty about the massage or the kinesiologist or the naturopath or whatever, and go, oh my goodness, I'm spending so much money. And we just it can get caught in that guilt. And it's the same thing. It's an investment. It's investing in my self-care and my mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And what a great investment, you know, even for your daughter, you know, that's to reframe it like that as well.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Because your little girl, did you say she's 5?
Yeah, so she turned 5 midway.
Heidi's 5. So how have you supported her in the 12 months following your husband's passing with her grief? You know, it's hard enough to go through grief on your own, but to be there for a child that, you know, it's probably was her first experience of grief as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It has, I found that side of it to be incredibly challenging, because I think the first thing you realize is that you're pretty out of your depth when dealing with these kind of things. That you, I was going, I don't know what to do for a child, because it was also probably one of my first experiences of loss and grief too. And so not only are you trying to deal with your own, you're realizing that you are caring for a child that has lost their father, and that her whole world has been flipped on its head as well. So look, I think one of the first pieces of advice that I got from psychologists, etc., was that, because I was thinking, do I have to start taking her to a psychologist? Like, what is the impact of that? And I must admit, my first thoughts around Heidi was I was scared. I was worried. Yeah. I just kept thinking, what does this mean for this, you know, innocent little girl going forward? But the psychologist kind of took me inside and said, look, she's too young to be someone at this point. And they said, all we can do is get you in the best shape possible, because she will feed off your emotions and feelings from there. So I'm really mindful in going back to that. If I invest in myself and am taking the best care of myself, then hopefully Heidi reads off that too. But look, it's difficult because it's constantly changing and evolving, her thoughts and feelings about it. And a lot of people have said to me, oh, but does she really understand? And then sometimes I want to shake them and be like, of course she fucking understands. Their dad's not here. And
you get some really stupid questions.
I get some really stupid questions. And even that thing too, where a lot of people say to me, well, it must be, this grief must be better for you because you have Heidi. And I'm like,
oh wow,
I have Heidi, but what about me? Like,
yeah,
am I allowed to be happy and have a good life, etc. too? So it's really interesting, because people almost forget about one or the other of you. But certainly with Heidi, I really early on realized that I had to make sure that I was in the best mental state that I could be to care for her and look after her, and answer any questions. The big thing for her has been that, particularly once she got back into day, realizing that she is different in some way to other children, and that she doesn't have a physically present father anymore. And I think that's one thing that we're just going to have to tackle as time goes on, because it's going to come up time and time and time again. But one of the things we did earlier this year was that we were invited to go on a camp, which was called Wombat's Wish. And that basically was dealing, it was a camp set up for bereaved children and their remaining parents. So we went down the coast, and it was the first time I could see that Heidi was really identifying with children. Similar situation, and that was really important for her. I think she was,
to know that she's not alone.
She was really struggling with that. But I think that, and one thing I really learned out of that, I think with children that are going through grief and loss and etc., is I think you've just got to be so open and honest with them. And you know, when you ask questions about what has happened, because at first I was thinking, I don't even know what to say. And you know, came out of this kind of camp saying, you have to tell her it was an asthma attack. You know, you don't have to go always into the most graphic details, but just what their brains can kind of take on. And, you know, we were even having this funny conversation where she was asking me about what had happened to Craig's body and he was cremated. And I don't know, we found ourselves giggling and laughing about it as I'm saying to her, you know, this is meant to be a tough conversation. But in her mind, you know, we're just navigating our way through it. And I think by me being open and honest with her means that she trusts me when I tell her things, and that I'm not trying to brush it away.
Joe, I love so many of the things that you're saying. It's not like, take, you know, just put the grief topic aside for a moment. So many of the things you're saying with your parenting skills are just phenomenal. The way you're connecting with Heidi, and the honesty, and that's some of the things I've learned from Mel, working with Mel over the years. And you're doing such a great job. And the way you stood up at the conference that we saw you at, and the way you perceive, but I'm sure you are naturally like that. And after hearing your story even more so today, you're just amazing. Would you say that because you would feel this way maybe if you didn't have Heidi to have to be strong for? Or do you think she's almost like a little bit of your saviour, that she's, because you have to be strong for her, you've had to look at the lighter side of it?
I think there's a bit of both. Part of me, you know, sometimes goes, God, you know, stuff you, Craig. Like, you've not only left me, you've left me as a single mum, you bastard. Yes. And this is so much harder. But at the same time, I think, you know, particularly when you both heard me speak at this event more recently, I think what I most want to get out of this is, one, that I want a great life and I want to be happy, but I want to be able to ultimately role model that for Heidi. So, you know, when I've written these speeches and I've got out there, that to kind of go, do you know what, in life shit is going to happen, and what has happened to us is so awful, and yeah, it's something that we shouldn't be having to go through, but we will. But I want to, I guess, say to her that you can be this strong, brave, like, independent woman, but also I think at times recognizing that you can be fragile as well. And, you know, yesterday I was having a conversation with Heidi because she was, yeah, she was really sad in the car, and I was like, oh, what's going on? She's like, I just miss daddy. And I think it early days I was kind of like, but, you know, everything will be okay. And I've just said, yesterday I said, that's okay, like, you're allowed to be, that's just, and you can sit with that. And I've learned as time's gone on that you sometimes just have to sit with your emotions and ride them
discomfort
out.
Yeah, the discomfort of those really challenging emotions. You know, I think in society we're programmed and conditioned to kind of go, oh, how can we be happy again?
Yes.
How can we be happy all the time? But there's so much power and, you know, learning in just being able to be in the discomfort of, yep, that exists.
Yeah.
And today I really miss my dad, and it feels unfair and sad.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think too, I learned on this camp as well that her grief will evolve as time goes on. So I think in this first year I've been, you know, kind of patting myself on the back or feeling lucky that Heidi just in herself innately is this really joyous, happy child that looks for the positives anyway. But that's not always going to be the case as she gets older and the absence becomes, you know, more prominent, or, you know, something will trigger her as she gets older, and, you know, hormones and puberty, etc. That will
absolutely boys and anything to do relating to, I suppose, having a dad.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah, so I kind of, you know, that things will evolve and change for her as time goes on. And I think even for Heidi, I've learned, like, our relationship has changed in this last year, as in, you know, I'm taking on the role of two parents, but I also, I guess, my, not expectations, but some of the conversations I have to have with her, sometimes a little bit more than perhaps I would have been saying whilst my husband Craig was alive. You know, I have to say to her, Heidi, you really need to help me. Or, you know, this is what's going on and I need your help. And sometimes I feel sad about it because I'm like, I feel like I've got a bit more expectation from her. Are we turning into like these two old women that just bicker with each other versus being mother and daughter? But there's a part of me that actually really likes it, because I think we're both have got this sense of independence and, you know, helping each other and being together and needing each other at sometimes, but also, you know, being able to be apart as well.
Yeah. And you've already probably covered, you know, as I'm listening to you speak, I can just hear, like, the most magnificent, greatest learnings, you know, for yourself. And they normally occur in the depths of despair or adversity. And I can hear, you know, the learning for Heidi and, you know, for a five-year-old, that's just
huge.
Yeah, absolutely.
What would you say that your greatest learning has been over the last 12 months?
Oh, gosh, what's my greatest learning? I feel like it's probably that life's still good, even though, like, this has been, like, the best but worst year of my life, which is such a strange thing to say, because it's almost like I can only liken what happened to me was that losing Craig, like, it brought me to my knees in every sense of it, you know. And I know people go through loss, but I feel like there's something in a partner, in that you not only lose that emotional stability but also financial stability, etc. So it was like I had just gone back to absolute square one, zero, naught, had nothing.
Yes.
And that I've had to rebuild from there. But, you know, in time you are laughing again and life's great despite.
And that's okay.
And that's okay. And I think you've got to.
I love that you've owned that and not felt guilty about saying that. Because so many people, I think, do feel guilty about moving.
Yeah, moving forward. Yeah, and I think for me, I remember that kind of turning point for me was, not sure if you ladies are aware, but I went to Cambodia for 2 months with Heidi in a moment of madness.
And I love it.
I was going to find myself. And I kind of did actually after a lot of beer and cocktails.
Yeah,
but, you know, when I left, I was very mixed up, very anxious, really just the weight of the world was weighing on me. And I just had to get away. I had to sort of, I was feeling smothered by everyone around me despite all the great intentions. I just, I was losing myself. And so I needed to go away. And when I got back from Cambodia, I remember going out one evening and someone saying to me, "How are you?" Now, before I'd gone away, people would ask me how I was. And sometimes your natural reaction is to say, like, "I'm good." But then I'd all of a sudden be like, "Oh my God, no, of course I'm not good. You know, my husband died. Like, I'm not allowed to be good." When I got back from this holiday and someone asked me how I was, I said, "I'm really great." And they're like, "No, but how are you?" And I was like, "I'm great. I've just been on holidays for 2 months with my beautiful daughter. I've drunk so much. I've been in the sun. I've had this freedom. I actually feel good. And isn't that okay?"
That's okay.
Yeah.
I love that. It's more than okay.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, look, obviously, you know, I felt great for a period of time and then came back into a really intense stage of my grief and loss with Craig's anniversary. And my birthday happens around that time. It was Father's Day. I just had this shit 12 days. Where I was just going, "Oh my God, can I take any more punches?" But kind of knowing when you feel good and life is good, just go with it. And
absolutely,
yeah, just enjoy it for what it
is. That's great advice. I mean, I do want to, you did just mention something which I would love to just touch on for those that are, you know, listening and finding this story as fascinating as we are. I think you're on the other side of what I'm going to say. I always find it awkward when someone's lost someone. How to behave. You know, you don't want to, like, well, you said, you know, about the smothering that did your head in, and it would do my head as well. And it's not that you're ungrateful, you're just like, you know what, I've handled it. I could imagine. But I always go, you know, do I send just a text? Do I not text? Do I call? Do I drop off a plate of food? You know, if that's something you do, do you offer to pick up the kids? Like, what would be something, like, your top two things to do, in your opinion? For those that are maybe, you know, some that loses someone and wants to help.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the first thing, and I think the most important thing, is acknowledge it. You know, whether that's via text, whether it's, you know, a face-to-face conversation, etc. I feel people feel, a lot of people feel incredibly uncomfortable with death and loss. And so I was surprised, you know, I mean, 90% of people were great, but there would have been 10% of people that would have seen me in the street and, you know, instigated a conversation and then not even acknowledged that Craig had died. And you know, when you're sitting there thinking, "Oh my God, so we're talking about the weather and we're and you're not even going to say anything." And I think it's important to acknowledge it, because you, and this may be my second tip, just try to read that person a little bit. So you can't do anything wrong. You'll soon know. So if you turn up at someone's doorstep, you'll know within a few minutes whether they want you to come in or whether they're happy for you just to drop the meal and run. Just try and read where they're at. But, you know, certainly make contact with them. Don't shy away from it, but also be open with them. And you can probably say, I'm feeling stuck. I don't know what to say to you. And and just be open and honest about that, but just let them know that you're thinking of them. But, yeah, definitely acknowledging, just trying to read where that person's at and how they're feeling, which can be difficult at times. And also, I guess, persisting sometimes too, because I think a lot of people shut down and try to shut people out. So, you know, regularly.
And not making it about themselves, maybe.
Definitely.
But, like, she didn't respond to my message saying condolences. Like, that's one of the things that I loved when you shared when we first met you.
Yeah.
That don't expect a reply.
Absolutely.
And it's not about them.
No. And it's not, don't turn that into something about you or your experience, etc. Just genuinely try to be there for that person and just know it's okay. And you know what? There's probably no offense meant if they don't get back to you. It could just be it's a bad day. It could be that they've had 150 messages that day and they're just, you know, going, I can't answer it. Or, yeah, it's just, you know, sometimes it's just an oversight. So not to read into that too much at all.
Yeah, I love those. Mm. So, Jo, I'm just thinking, you know, it's been 12 months, which is really just over 12 months, not a long time. Mm. So what, you know, I wonder if you've thought about or, you know, reflected or even know, you know, what your greatest challenges are moving forward. Like, I can't even imagine, you know, what that might feel like for you. You know, obviously they're going to be, and you've touched on them with even just supporting Heidi in her grief and how that will change and evolve over time. But what do you feel like?
I think the biggest challenge for me actually is this single mum title.
Yes.
I really feel the weight and responsibility of that. Yeah. And I think it's because you all of a sudden you lose that sounding board of someone that has got as just as big a vested interest in your child as you.
Mm.
So when it comes to the decisions about school, when Heidi, I don't know, gets a boyfriend, you know, or she's acting up, I do feel really daunted by that. And also I think it's that how do you strike the balance of being a mum but also being your own person too?
Yes.
Trying to ensure that I don't get too lost in either role.
Mm-hmm.
So it frightens me. And I guess also there's that challenge financially as well.
Yes.
It's always on my mind where I think, you know, gosh, I've got to bring up this girl on my own for next, you know, whenever she decides to get a job. And look, she was telling me this morning she just wants to make coffee, so I'm not thinking she's going to be
job, which I don't good on her. We all need good coffee.
As she long as she's happy.
A world-class barista.
But I hope she gets good tips. So look, there's a lot of responsibility that I certainly feel, and I think that's going to be the biggest challenge for me is, and I think sometimes just going easy on yourself, I sometimes find that a big challenge because I think I can be very proactive and try and solve things and like, let's keep it all together. And, you know, I was actually talking to my psychologist about being a single mum during the week because I've been struggling with it a little bit where it's a new role for me that I'm trying to, navigate my way through. And I said to her, I really kind of regret the first 6 months. I don't think I paid enough attention to Heidi. What was I even doing then? As you reflect, she just said, but you were just doing the best you could do at that time.
Absolutely. You know, we're so hard on ourselves as mums, aren't we? Like our expectations. And I think even more so in this, you know, society that we live in at the moment where we have, you know, everything at our fingertips in terms of
too much.
Yeah, it's too much.
We're overwhelmed.
Saturated and overwhelmed and have all these yardsticks in terms of measuring up to.
Yes.
And we don't even need that because we already have, you know, the greatest expectations on ourselves.
Yes.
So really making space to pay attention to that and really, you know, nourish yourself and nurture yourself and look after you in this new role that you have. How do you even do that?
Because that's one of the things I always love to talk about, Jo's self-care and self-love and not feeling guilty about taking that time for yourself as a woman and as your individual self. And you just shared, you know, one of your biggest struggles at the moment is having that single mum, you know, lack of time.
Title.
The single mum title. How do you have a moment of self-care in your life?
Yeah.
And if it is, and it might be like having a Tim Tam, let's face it. But like what's your selfless act of self-care for yourself to go, Jo, good on you. This is for you right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I learned pretty soon on for me when I feel my best kind of self is when I get away from the world for a little while. So I do that in two different ways. I think I walk a lot and I I whether that's just around the block or whether I go hiking, that feels like a big investment in me to just, I don't know, zone out, listen to music and just think or sometimes not think. And then the other thing I do is I try to regularly go away for a night or two just on my own, drink a bottle of wine or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm in the process of hopefully booking a trip for next year with a girlfriend, although I'm sort of equally happily to go alone too, because I think it's just, I just need time out from being a mum, a sister, you know, a friend or et cetera, just to go back to me and go, how am I feeling? Like, check in with yourself, because as we've discussed, like, our worlds are so frenetic and so much going on that you just need to take a step back and go, how am I feeling? Am I good?
Yeah.
Am I not good? You know, so they're probably my two biggest things is making sure that I take some time for myself and trying not to feel guilty about that, even though we all do.
And I love that, because when you stop and you take some time out, even the walking, you know, walking, you're very in your body, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're not, you know, so much in your head.
Yes.
And just doing that when you're away from everything else, you just have a lot more clarity.
Absolutely. And I think
you're creating this space for it.
Yeah. And I guess too, for me, I go, it actually creates like the endorphins as well. So what at the start of a walk could have been a pressing problem, by the end I've kind of either solved it or I just feel better. And it's funny, I think I used to be one of those exercises for like, I need to look good, except vanity purposes. And definitely over this last year, I move and I exercise to feel good. And that's actually been really liberating. To go that I walk because I want to, and whether that's because I'm feeling shit and I'm trying to make myself better, or whether I'm feeling good and I just want to be out in the sunshine or fresh air or whatever it is, it's been a good feeling.
It's a feel good factor.
Sure
it is. So I'm just loving listening to you. I think we could talk to you all day. Last question.
Yeah.
I could imagine with the overwhelm of, like you mentioned, you know, finances and solely being responsible for Heidi, that you'd likely, I would experience anxiety and, you know, overwhelm as well. How do you manage, I know you've just told us, you know, your tools are walking and moving and taking some time out. Is there anything else that you use specifically to manage anxiety?
Like in that moment when you can feel
My goodness. And I literally have had that probably twice, like 2 days in the last 2 weeks. I've been doing this intensive kind of trauma therapy, so trying new things as always. And in the build up to both sessions, I've become really anxious without realizing at the time that it was anxiety. And you know how you like try and I don't know, all of a sudden I was anxious about work and friends, et cetera. And I think for me in those moments, I actually just had to go, this is anxiety, just breathe.
Yes.
Breathe, calm yourself down. And I think try to think rationally, which can be really difficult. But I think if you just slow things down a little bit and that's through breath or, you know, just switching your phone off, going for that walk or just refocusing and going, am I potentially making this up in my head or making things worse than they actually are?
I love that because, you know, breathe, it's such a natural thing. We're human, we're made to actually breathe, yet
we don't do it.
Sometimes I find myself going,
I know, like, it's crazy.
Woman, breathe. You're like, that's what your nose is for.
I know.
It's just not natural. For some reason, we hold our breath.
Yes. We're very shallow breathers. Yeah. So, and particularly when we're in a heightened state, we're taking those little shallow breaths, which don't help.
Yeah.
So that's a really great.
And I think also, I was going to say, my other tip would be tell someone. Because I often, my poor sister cops these phone calls all the time where she'll know straight away, she's like, what's going on? And then I rattle off 25 things that I'm worried about. And then it's almost as soon as I've said them and told them that I go, actually, I'm being an idiot. There's nothing, it's fine. So I think sometimes just telling someone that can help calm you a little bit, whether that's your partner or a friend or a mum or something like that, that's sometimes once you've verbalized it, you've got it out there and then you sort of step back a bit and go, well, maybe I'm being a bit silly.
The power of this, you know, speaking it is just so magnificent. Yeah. I think I see that all the time when, you know, when you mulling it over in your head and you just keep it intentional, it seems so much bigger than what it actually is. And then when you say it out loud, it's almost like you can put it into perspective.
Absolutely.
So true, Mel.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So true.
Thank you so much, Jo, for your time and sharing your story, not only with us, but with every other woman that's going to hear this podcast. Mm. And I hope that, you know, even if I just take one little tip out of your share today, if they're going through grief themselves or someone that they know, then, you know, we've all done a great thing today.
Mm. I'm just so thankful as well, Jo, that you've made the time to chat with us today and about, you know, a topic that's it's big. I found myself welling up a couple of times when you were speaking. It's
hard not to.
Yeah.
But your strength is amazing and it's inspiring. And I think it's a great, I love your energy gives it a, to be honest, I was quite nervous about chatting to you because it's always a topic that you're,
it's awkward. Yeah.
How do you talk about it without, you know, crossing the line? But yeah. Just your energy and your purpose that you've found within your life right now with Heidi is really inspiring. And I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much, Lex. Indeed. It's been an absolute pleasure. And, yeah, look, it's just great to talk to like-minded women and share your experience. And if you can help someone in some way, like that's, yeah, to me that's amazing.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
Thanks, Jo. Bye.